Hey, science fans, now you can have all of the Real Science Friday shows on MP3 CD from 2007, 2008, or 2009. Hear Bob and Fred present the compelling scientific evidence that the Earth is young and that there is a creator. Real Science Friday 2007, 2008, and 2009 are each available by calling 1-800-8-NYART. Or you can get the MP3 CDs or the MP3 downloads at kgovstore.com.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Fred, we got a big show today because Christianity Today.
Uh-oh, that magazine, huh?
Yeah, they have done a cover story, The Search for the Historical Adam. I always thought we knew where Adam was. He's in the Bible. We knew who he is, where he was.
And how he was historical.
Yeah. And Jesus and Paul and Moses all say he's historical, but they tend to be liberal. And Christianity Today has a cover story wondering, how about Adam? And they're arguing that Adam really evolved by Darwinian mechanisms from ape-like creatures, and then God put a soul in him and his spouse, Eve.
Yeah, so we're going to go through this article today and see if we can tear it to pieces.
Well, let's see. So, Fred, it should be fun. The article itself is not real heavy on the science. The article has sort of a trust us. We looked at the science, and they quote a little bit from a couple scientists. You dove into the science a bit more, right, for this program?
Yeah, I did a search on some of the references they provided. And like you said, they didn't really deal with the scientific claims they were making.
Not too much.
Pretty much wants you to believe what they said. I like how you put that.
So Dr. Dennis Venema, did you read his paper?
I did read his paper, well, and he cited in this article. And then so we'll talk about that and the claims that he's making.
Well, that's great. So if you could take that part of it, and if we could start out with, I went through the article, and I would like to take some of the biblical claims that they're making, and then also some of the scientific claims. And so, but we'll get to your part maybe a little later. So where do you want to start, with the article itself or their editorial?
Well, I think we should start with the editorial on the article before the article actually starts in the magazine.
All right.
And so this editorial said, if both biblical and scientific clues suggest a larger population contemporary with Adam and Eve, and then in parentheses, whom did Cain marry? Who did God protect him from? We can still conceive of Adam and Eve as leaders of that original population. That suggestion has a virtue of embracing both a prehistoric couple and a prehistoric population.
Okay, so they're saying, hey, look, if science and the Bible tell us that there's got to be a lot of people, not just two people, then we should be willing to look at that. So Cain married his sister. They ask two questions. They imply that the Bible suggests that there were, they say, 10,000 individuals back then in this article. Well, whom did Cain marry? That's the question.
And that's one of the most asked questions by both atheists and Christians alike.
Right. And Cain married his sister just like Abraham did.
Yeah.
So that doesn't seem to be especially complicated.
Well, a lot of people don't understand that because it's incest, right? Well, was incest a problem at the beginning?
No. At the beginning, God created Adam and Eve perfectly genetically, and so their children would not have harmful mutations, degenerative disease. And so when they came together and had a child themselves, that child would not inherit a lethal mutation and die or suffer or be blind. That child would be fully healthy. So it wasn't until many centuries passed where the effects of sin wore down the human genome to where at the time of Moses, that's when God said that you cannot marry a close relative.
Yeah, and it wasn't really that many generations after the flood, right? Which in itself was a form of a genetic bottleneck where this could happen even more rapidly.
Even more so.
And the Bible does say that Adam and Eve had many sons and daughters.
Yeah, many sons and daughters. So the question of who did Cain marry? Well, like Abraham, he married his sister. Sarah was Abraham's sister. She was his half-sister, but he married his sister. Okay, then their second question, whom did God protect him from when Cain murdered Abel? Well, God protected Cain from retribution from his siblings, his nephews, even grandnephews, a community of dozens of people, undoubtedly. Now, Fred, the calculation is difficult as to how many people would have been alive at the time of that murder, because it's based heavily on how many children, the number of children born to the average couple. But for example, I've looked at the calculation based on standard population equations that from Adam and Eve with two people till the time of the flood, about 1,800 years later. Do you recall about how many people may have been on the earth?
One of the scientists at Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship put it at about 1 billion, and that was being very conservative, actually.
1 billion. If you say that each couple had three children, only three children, and a generation was 35 years, it's over 4 billion people.
It's 4 billion. That's
interesting. With those variables.
Because a 35-year generation, right now, population geneticists use 20 years. So
sure,
you're being very
right.
conservative.
Yeah, very
in that,
conservative.
In that estimate.
So let's say now we're not talking about 1,800 years. We're only talking about 125 to 130 years after Adam and Eve were created by the time Cain murdered his brother Abel. So let's say that's only four generations. So there would be a community of just dozens of human beings. But Fred, I don't know how big your family is, but my family has dozens of people. There are dozens of people when we get a family get-together. Do you guys have that?
Oh, at least the dozens.
Dozens. And if someone killed one of our brothers or one of our sons, of course we would be inclined to punish whoever killed our loved one. And if we lived in a patriarchal society, as was Adam's family, so it existed on its own with no earthly government above it, then of course, yes, without God's prohibition, without God restraining us, we would want to punish Cain. So when God prohibited the death penalty prior to the flood, just as he mandated the death penalty immediately after the flood, without God's prohibition, sure, Cain was in danger of retribution. But these questions, whom did Cain marry, his sister, whom did God protect him from, the rest of the family, their clan, what these questions are doing is casting doubt on Jesus, indicating that Adam and Eve were specially created by God as male and female from the dust of the earth, and the Bible's teaching that there was no death before Adam. They're casting doubt on that, and that Eve was the mother of all people. So they're casting doubt on these fundamental biblical teachings.
And if you doubt the first book of the Bible, why would you believe the rest? You know, I use an analogy with when I give talks to kids, I ask them, think of your favorite book, like an airplane book. And if you went and grabbed a book off the shelf and you saw these really neat pictures of airplanes and you opened it up and the very first page has a picture of a flying elephant or a flying saucer,
right.
Do you think the kid's going to be taking the rest of that book seriously, or is he going to go put it back on the shelf?
Right. He's going to say, this book doesn't tell me how airplanes fly.
Yeah, so Satan is very intelligent, very clever. If he can get you to doubt the very first book of the Bible, why would you believe the historicity of the rest of the Bible, such as the resurrection, which is the most important part of the Bible?
Sure.
So the actual article is entitled, The Search for the Historical Adam. They start off by saying, the center of the evolution debate has shifted from asking whether we came from earlier animals to whether we could have come from one man and one woman. Wow, that sounds like...
I think that's a bit of a dodge or a deflection.
Oh, yes.
I think they're trying to lure unsuspecting Christians, even with that, Fred, into Darwinism. There are tens of millions of Americans who reject Darwinism, and Darwinists want people to think that everybody believes in Darwinism. They like you to think that. Mm-hmm. At least all intelligent people do. Well, they're claiming that the first question has been resolved.
So, yeah, so they're saying
the debate,
that the debate
has shifted.
It shifted because that's been resolved. Evolution, everybody believes
right.
it.
Yes.
So now we got to figure out about Adam and Eve and how they fit in.
Exactly. Yes, we came from animals. That was the debate. Now the debate is the second question, if Christianity is true, which they still think that it is, but they're on that slippery slope, Christianity today.
Absolutely.
You give up Genesis and the literal creation by God in the recent past of Adam and Eve and the universe, then eventually you give up the resurrection, the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ. So if God didn't create Adam's body, then Christ is the second Adam, and his body didn't rise from the dead. Those two tend to go together in history. You give up one, you give up the other.
Well, you know what else tends to go together? In fact, it goes together almost 100% of the time, is very liberal churches. They all began with a compromise of Genesis, all of them.
You mean the churches, for example, that are pro-abortion, that support homosexual marriage, those kinds of churches?
Yes, those kinds of churches, even the churches that are fully apostate, that don't even believe Jesus rose from the dead anymore,
right?
They all began,
they
have something in common with each other.
Right.
They all began with a compromise of Genesis. Once you start compromising in one part, why would you not start compromising on the rest
right.
and explain away things that aren't convenient to your belief system?
Exactly. So Christianity today says, well, now we're up to the second question. Did we come from one man and one woman? And their answer is going to be, well, Christianity is true, but so God must have put a human soul into one couple, and that couple evolved from Australopithecus, some kind of ape-like creature. In the article, they say 5 or 6 million years ago, and so that's like a 3-foot-tall ape into a human. So God chose, at some point, he chose a couple, and he put a soul and a spirit in them.
And said, and then they said that they were the leader of this group of 10,000 people, right?
Yeah. So there were 10,000, and Adam became the head of those 10,000. It gets really peculiar. They're going to argue, Fred, that the scientific evidence shows that human beings evolved physically from ape-like creatures. That's going to be their argument. That's when we get into your part of this. And it's fascinating because they have three main lines of argument, and it's just astounding that Christianity today didn't show us the other interpretation of those three lines,
that
they
right.
actually support creation. And what they also mean when they say that, well, Adam and Eve evolved from ape-like creatures and God put a soul in them, what they mean also, although they don't trumpet this, is that when you do away with the 6 literal days of creation, as you and I have talked about, you also give in to death before Adam, so you give up on that biblical doctrine. You also reject a global flood, as these old earth Christian Darwinists do.
Would you give up on a global flood?
It becomes required because you interpret the strata differently. You say the strata has all these fossils which are the evidence of evolution. And the funny thing is the paleontologists say, well, there's really not much evidence for evolution in there. It's a big, dark secret.
That's right. Yeah, and a global flood would tear that all apart, wouldn't it?
It really would. So,
at least their view of it.
Right, exactly. So you reject not only that God specially created Adam from the dust of the ground, but you reject the global flood, the 6 days of creation in the order that they're presented in Genesis 1, because they put day 4 first and all, and they rearrange the plants and all that.
Oh, all kinds of calisthenics in Genesis 1.
They reject death before Adam. Fred, these biblical teachings go, and it's not surprising because, as with so much in life, these form a tightly woven fabric, and when you pull a thread loose, then the whole fabric begins to unravel. And if Genesis is not literal, as you just said, then even though it's presented as literal by Moses and Paul and Jesus.
And Hebrew linguistics experts will tell you that it's literal, and they don't even have a stake in this debate.
Yeah, great, very great point, as we've quoted in the past. All right, so that's how they start the article. Forget about question one. Now we're up to question two. That's like a sleight of hand, I think.
It is a sleight of hand. I mean, just the death before sin is a huge issue. I mean, they're teaching a God that had spent millions of years of creating and destroying death, suffering, disease, all of these things for millions of years. Mm-hmm. And didn't Jesus call death an enemy? Mm. I mean, he's not the God of death. He's a God of life.
Right.
And death is a temporary part of history. But if you believe this, it's a permanent part of millions of years of history.
Darwinism is all about death creating life. Death creating life. And the Bible's about God creating life, not death creating life. So, Fred, this article goes on to talk about this Francis Collins. He's really the main guy in the whole article. And he's a big shot scientist who thankfully he has become a Christian. He believes in God.
Yeah, he's a former atheist and now he's a Christian. But unfortunately, he believes in evolution. He's a theistic evolutionist. Mm-hmm. He was appointed by Obama to be the head of the NIH, National Institute for Health. Mm-hmm. And he has expertise in the genome. I know
he's heavily
involved in the human genome.
So he's especially qualified on this topic. But it's amazing how your perspective changes your conclusions.
That's right.
So
the article goes on to mention Collins as one of the most eminent scientists ever to identify as an evangelical Christian, but he staunchly defends Darwin evolution.
All right.
I saw that and I immediately had a problem with that statement.
Well, sure, because there are so many scientists who are creationist, including, as we've often listed, many of the fathers of the physical sciences, both before and after Darwin. And you could just go to kgov.com and search for fathers of science, and you'll find them listed.
And they're far more eminent scientists than Francis Collins. Nothing personal. But let's face it, Louis Pasteur, who sounds like the more prominent scientist in history?
Oh, Louis Pasteur. And how about Isaac Newton?
Isaac Newton. Who was that guy?
Was he an evangelical? I mean, he wrote extensively that people should believe that the Bible is supreme in its historical reckoning. Isaac Newton.
He's essentially considered the greatest scientist of all time. So this kind of flies in the face of them saying that Collins is one of the most eminent scientists ever to identify.
Yeah, Johann Kepler as an evangelical.
There's a long list
as a Christian. Right. And so he's one of many, and it's a logical fallacy to say, well, he says it, so we should believe him. That's a logical fallacy.
And a lot of evolutionists love this guy because he's still preaching evolution. So this deception that gets you on a slippery slope is still present, and maybe even more so. Mm-hmm. Then they summarize Wheaton College's statement of faith that God directly created Adam and Eve, the historical parents of the entire human race. In Collins' 2006 bestseller, The Language of God, he reported the scientific indications that anatomically modern humans emerged from primate ancestors perhaps 100,000 years ago, long before the apparent Genesis time frame.
All right. So you introduce either the gap theory or the day-age theory that every day was, say, millions of years. And you say goodbye to Exodus chapter 20 in the Ten Commandments, where God explicitly says that in 6 days he created everything in heaven and on earth and everything in them. Fred, I didn't look up what Francis Collins teaches about the global flood, but I will bet. What could I bet?
Well, you'd have to give somebody 1 in 10,000 odds, and you'd still win the bet. There's no way he rejects the global flood.
Right.
No question about it.
So they make it sound like, well, you know, it's just the time frame that we're questioning. But pretty soon you're questioning most of the fundamental doctrines, teachings of the foundation of the Bible.
So I wonder if Christ would ask him, have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female?
Yeah.
Wasn't that in the Bible somewhere?
Yeah. Jesus said this.
Matthew chapter 19.
Jesus takes Genesis as literal history. And you know what? For the most part, so does BAR. Remember BAR, Biblical Archaeological Review? That referee journal of archaeologists, they're atheists. Effectively, they don't believe in God, but they have this journal going on for decades about the Bible and archaeology and how uncanny it is how the Bible 1,000 times over has been confirmed by archaeologists and historians. And they say even in Genesis, which is so ancient history, and they say we could confirm so much of Genesis by what we glean of the culture and the contracts and the language and everything we find from antiquity supports the general framework of the culture and the way things worked as we read in Genesis. So they don't find in the culture information about Abel, say, Cain and Abel, in history and archaeology, but they find so much, like the price of a slave and the nature of a contract and inheritance rights. And they find all this and they say, you know what? That's the way it was back in that time of Abraham and so on.
That's right. There's all kinds of evidence that take us back to both the flood and creation. The Chinese language, have you seen where the symbols of their language, you can split apart the symbols and they say something that has a biblical reference to it. You can do that with quite a few of the symbols.
Like in the first 10 chapters of Genesis, before the Tower of Babel.
Yeah. It's like the word for boat is something you take out two of the characters and it's eight people.
Eight mouths to feed.
That's right. Now, I showed that to my manager, former manager. She still works for Trimble and she's Chinese. Mm. And she confirmed that. She said, yeah, those symbols mean exactly what you said.
Isn't that fun? And I've done the same thing with Chinese people. And I said, is this true where the Chinese symbol for temptation has to do with a tree in a garden?
Oh, that's right. And that's another good one.
Well, yeah, it does. Yeah. So there's a bunch of those. There's a great book, I think, titled Discovery in Genesis that goes through a number of those.
So Collins goes on to say that this originated with a population that numbered something like 10,000, not two individuals. Mm. Instead of the traditional belief in the specially created man and woman of Eden, who are biologically different from all other creatures, Collins mused, might Genesis be presenting a poetic and powerful allegory about God endowing humanity with a spiritual and moral nature?
All right. So, Fred, there, Collins himself in Christianity Today, they say what they're doing. So we're reducing one of the historical books of the Bible into a poetic allegory. In Genesis, the Bible has history and it has poetry. It has the Psalms and Proverbs, and they're written in a poetic form. And then it has the books of history and the books of the prophets. And so this is one of the historical books, and to turn it into a poetic allegory, like a parable, seems uncalled for. We don't have the right to do that. If Moses, Paul, and Jesus presented it as historical, it might support our career and our salary and our grants from the government, but it's not justifiable to say, well, we're going to take it as poetry and as a symbol.
That's right. In fact, they go on to mention another book that he co-authored with another Christian theistic evolutionist, and they said that, unfortunately, the concepts of Adam and Eve as the literal first couple and the ancestors of all humans simply do not fit the evidence.
So they're saying that there's scientific evidence that shows that the Bible story, when taken literally, is false. And Fred, how many times have scientists lost on that one? I mean, it's just not good odds to say that God's word is wrong and science got it right. And
that's why we're able to do so many of these shows.
Yeah, and have so much fun.
That's right.
Over and over. So if you're willing to set aside Jesus' historical testimony and Paul's and Moses, then the fall of man is an allegory. It's poetic. Then just as easily is the creation of man in God's image and likeness. That's an allegory too.
That's right.
And so is judgment for sin. That's an allegory.
So where does it end?
Where does it end?
You know, and I was at a youth conference, Bob, and there was a theistic evolutionist there. He was talking on a different topic of psychology, of all things. But we were at breakfast with a bunch of the youth, and we got onto this topic. And he said that he believed that God was a pool player, and he took a lot of pool shots before Adam and Eve. So basically, that explains millions of years. So he allegorized that. I told him, that sounds like a bad pool player to me. I mean, that's, you know, millions of years of death, disease, and suffering. Mm. That doesn't sound like a lot of those shots were really good. I mean, we have evidence of cancer in the fossil record, right? Mm. So that's millions of years
of pain and suffering and death for God to create by.
Yep.
Fred, and I know we're almost out of time, so we'll have to continue this because I want to get especially to your part where you look at the science of what they're claiming. We've been looking at the biblical aspect. But, you know, at our website, kgov.com, there's a tab called Writings, and there's this article on why was Canaan cursed? And there's an interesting summary of genetics in human beings at the top of it. And that summary, which comes right out of the major refereed scientific journals, is saying the opposite of what Christianity Today is saying in Collins. And so let me share that with the audience. This has to do with mitochondrial Eve and Y chromosomal Adam. And Fred, you know the story. Who was it that published in Science magazine that mitochondrial Eve lived a mere 6,000 years ago?
I think it was Barbara Baboon.
No, Fred, that's terrible.
Ann Gibbons.
Ann Gibbons. What they did, and you could read about this topic, when did the first human woman live? Over the last 10 years, they've been publishing on this, and they've gone back and forth, but we can give you up to date this year. The latest is that if they include chimp DNA in their analysis, they can push it back 200,000 years. But if they only look at the human DNA and human mutation rates, then Eve lived 6,000 years ago. One woman, Eve, lived 6,000 years ago.
Well, that number sounds familiar.
It sure does sound familiar. And so what they say is, well, we recalibrated the mitochondrial clock, and we realized that Eve lived 200,000 years ago. Well, that's circular reasoning. That's when you're assuming we've evolved from chimps, and you're including chimp DNA in with human DNA, then you get 200,000 years.
Yeah, you have to throw in the chimps.
Yeah, right. But if you just look at the human data, as Ann Gibbons wrote, mitochondrial Eve would be a mere 6,000 years old. And Fred, then there's Y chromosomal Adam and the information on him. Wow, let's get into it in the next show. But there's overwhelming evidence that our human parents lived just in the recent past.
All right, Paul, let's do it.
Thank you, Fred. God bless you. KGov.com, Real Science Friday. Have you heard of the Plot Manuscript? It's 330 pages, an overview of the entire Bible. People who have read it have said it's helped them understand and enjoy the Word of God. Hi, this is Bob Enyart. I wrote the plot years ago. We sell it at a money-back guarantee, $49.95 plus shipping and handling. And if you don't feel that you really understand the Bible now, we want to give you your money back. So go online to order it at kgov.com, or call us at 800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278.
Would you like to study the Bible but don't really know where to start? Bob Enyart's seminar on hermeneutics, tools for studying the Bible, will help you to study and understand the Bible on a whole new level. Hermeneutics, tools for studying the Bible, is available by calling 1-800-8-ENYART, or you can get the MP3 CD or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.